Which Manning brother will win the FanDuel Kick of Destiny 3 on Super Bowl Sunday? Peyton or Eli? Make your free pick now to compete for a share of $10 million in bonus bets. May the best Manning win. Only on FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Vermont. No purchase necessary. $10 million prize pool to be split equally among all eligible participants who made the correct pick. Prize issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
A week on from Storm Eowyn, and with still over 100,000 people left without power, there's a growing frustration, some feeling that rural Ireland was abandoned by the government. Also, the government has now appointed both cabinet and junior ministers, with women hugely underrepresented in those numbers. And all of this comes on the back of Sinn Féin TD Pat Daly taking legal action against the government's increase in super junior ministers, or in fact their existence at all. Joining me now to talk about all of this for our Friday forum, Marie Sherlock, Labour TD for Dublin Central. We have the Fianna Fáil TD for Dublin Midwest, Shane Moynihan, and also we are joined by Christina Finn, political editor with The Journal. Good morning and welcome to one and all.
Good morning.
Okay, perception and reality. What about the people who feel abandoned by the government in the wake of the storm? Marie.
Yeah, look, I think, I think why most people would accept that obviously when a storm happens and there's a day or two of terrible inconvenience, the thought that there are people still stuck at home or locked out of their homes because their homes have been so badly damaged or indeed because of electricity, I think does pose questions now for our level of preparedness. Like, the reality is that there has been an incredible effort by the ESB, by our local authorities, by other public agencies over the past week. But I suppose the reality is that they've been scrambling as well. Like, we've had to have staff coming in.
The lads out there, and they're mostly lads, climbing up the poles and dragging generators up to water treatment plants, they're all doing a great job. It was you lot in Leinster House that let the people down by not having a preparedness.
Yeah, well, look, and I think it's the government, obviously, that have to lead that preparedness. Like, the reality is that, you know, the risk of storms in this country is increasing. Like, as in, you know, the Met Éireann expect that we're going to have the storms are going to increase in intensity by 20% in terms of storm surges with regards to coastal flooding and, of course, with regards to just heavier precipitation in general. But I suppose my concern now at this stage is that we have a proper coordination in place, much stronger than what we have. Because, like, for instance, the health system is the one that I have engaged with. Like, as in, we have people in decongregated settings, those with intellectual disabilities or indeed physical disabilities, who or in ordinary houses, who have been left completely short. I have 10 individuals living in camp beds over the last week and a half, over the past week, because there's been no forward planning with regards to those health needs in the community. And so,
I heard lots of stuff on air, though, about someone who can't power an electric wheelchair, someone who can't generate an oxygen supply or whatever it is. And there's a kind of why aren't the ESB fixing me? Do the ESB even know about you? Do they know you have this problem? How is that to be addressed? Shane?
Well, I think the first thing we have to recognise is that we need to get power and water back to as many people as possible. And that has been the priority of the government over the last week or so. The second thing worth pointing out, which I think has been lost in the commentary a little bit, is that this was a unique weather event. We haven't seen winds of 180 kilometres an hour in Ireland in a long, long time. So I think it's important that we remember that this was a unique weather event. Yes, we now have to start thinking about adaptation and mitigation towards these sort of events in the future, without a doubt. But in terms of the response of government, I mean, we've seen Minister Dara Cleary leading from the front on this in particular, and the Taoiseach, a quarter of a million almost has been paid in humanitarian support.
But I'm surprised that, for instance, that there isn't a generator at every Uisce Éireann facility. I'm just surprised at that. They're not that expensive. And there are 8,000 facilities around the country. And you might say, well, you can't really have 8,000 generators. Well, some of them must be so small that the generators would not be expensive to have on standby, and you run them every so often to make sure they're still functioning. I mean, that to me was shocking.
And that is the sort of learning that needs to go right back into the National Emergency Coordination Group on how we prepare for the increased frequency of these events in the future. But I do think it is important to say that we have now stepped up a very strong scaled effort across the country to restore power to people and to restore water to people. That number is coming down at a faster pace.
But when you hear all the stuff about individual hard cases,
for sure,
you know, people who are looking across the road and they see lights on in their neighbour's house. They don't have lights and they need electricity, perhaps for the very basics of cooking and heating.
And I understand that
frustration. They have no fireplace anymore. They can't throw a few logs in the fire. Christina?
Yeah, Pat, I was down in Roscommon when the Taoiseach was down there earlier this week, and I was speaking to some people there in St. Bridget's JAA Club, and they were saying that they have a generator for the floodlights for the pitch, yeah, but it's not connected to the clubhouse. So they were saying simple things could be that the generators...
Why does the government have to do that? Why can't they do that? Do you know what I mean?
I think they said that it would cost a good bit of money for every
JAA
club.
Do we expect the government to do every single thing for us? If you've got a particular difficult situation, you're the only one maybe who knows about it.
But I don't think it's up to every JAA club to be planning for storms that are going to land on our shores. It's up to local authorities and it's up to government to be making these decisions and plans. And yes, I think it has to be said it's unprecedented, but we are being told by the Taoiseach that more severe storms are coming. So preparation is going to be needed. Like on the issue of the generators, a lot of focus was on why the orders weren't put in prior to the storm. We had James Brown, Minister at the Department of Housing now, saying the assessment had to be done after the storm hit to see exactly what we needed. But the understanding is that I think 17 generators were coming from Denmark, Poland. I think a number of them landed during the week. More were meant to be coming from Luxembourg. The request was put in on Saturday. But the department, the member states got back to the Department of Housing and said they needed a bit more information about voltage, the type of generators that were needed. And a response wasn't given by, according to the National
Emergency
Response, saying that the additional information was given over on Monday. So that's a 2-day lag in terms of when we're getting those generators shipped, when information needs to be fast and quick if we're in a very fluid emergency.
I think I heard
situation.
The Taoiseach saying something that you can't really apply for help until you need help. You can't say, we're a bit worried about this red alert we've set up, therefore we want you to put your generators on standby for us. That's not the way it works in Europe. It's when you have damage, then they'll come to our aid. And we happen to be way off on the west coast of Europe.
Yeah, but the point
so it's
is
harder for us.
That the damage was done on Saturday and that further details weren't supplied until Monday.
And I'd also say that the ESB are still, up until the middle of this week, we're still identifying areas where damage had been created that they weren't aware of as well. So I think we have to be a bit realistic here as well, that there are parts of the country that there's only repairs we're getting to that they wouldn't have seen the extent of the damage.
I don't think anyone's criticising the ESB and the work that the people are doing on the ground. It's just the questions deserve to be answered or asked about level of preparedness. And that's in no way to disparage the work that's going.
And no one here is disparaging it, but ultimately that information comes from crews on the grounds. I mean, we're not expecting departments and ministers aren't physically able to collect all that information. They're getting the information from the people on the ground who are doing it.
I mean, you've got to think, if someone doesn't have a mobile phone connection, they have no power, and they're supposed to somehow, if they're, say, way off, halfway up a mountain, they're supposed to tell the ESB how. And the ESB won't necessarily know that there's a single flimsy wire down some boreen. They don't know that until somebody tells them. Mm. They cannot scour every inch of the grid in the wake of the storm.
And if I may hear as well, Pat, it is easy for someone like me who represents the Dublin constituency to think that's how it should work. But ultimately, we know Dublin is a lot more compact. Yeah. It's a lot more densely populated. The wiring is a lot more evident. In rural Ireland, it's not. We have 165,000 kilometres of distribution network across the country. And we just have to have that perspective as well, that it does take a little bit of time to collect this information.
I think it'll be interesting to see where the conversation goes after this, because we have a lot of people talking about underground cables. And I remember covering extensively back in 2016, I think it was, AirGrid were doing a massive upgrade of the electricity system. And if people remember back then, there was a huge amount of protests about pylons that were turning up in different neighbourhoods around the country. And at the time, I think there was a lot of conversation about whether we could put all these cables underground. And AirGrid said at the time that it was going to cost about $2 billion to do something like that, and it would add 3% increase on the electricity bills of customers for the next 50 years. And that was sort of the thinking, you know, when you're talking nearly 10 years ago. Will that discussion need to be had now? Are willing, you know, how much of it cost $2 billion
But if you've got someone who's, as I say, halfway up a mountain, and you want to put that cable underground, and it's only two wires to one farmhouse out in the middle of nowhere, I'm sorry, that's never going to happen. And that set of wires is always going to be vulnerable to high winds, to a tree falling, to a tractor running into a pole. It's always going to be vulnerable to that. But there has to be a reasonable cost-benefit analysis.
Yeah, very much so. And I think that that conversation will definitely be looked at, I think, over the coming months and year in terms of whether we're going to have more severe weather events. But I think ultimately, a lot of these things cost a lot of money. And that's going to be something
that we'll have to do. Investment in the network is a priority for them as well.
Marie?
But I suppose the reality here is that the defence all week has been that this is an unprecedented event. The research has been there for quite a number of years now that our changing weather patterns in this country mean that we are much more vulnerable.
The experts are saying this was not climate related. It was a unique thing called a weather bomb.
No, but
Mary Robinson herself said that.
But the point, Pat, is right. Okay, that whatever the genesis of this particular event, that we know that we're going to have adverse events in.
CarMax knows that finding the right car is all about exploring your options, like the option to shop your way on your schedule. At CarMax, you can browse, compare, and pre-qualify online, then finish up at the store, or simply start on the lot. The choice is yours, because at CarMax, you're in the driver's seat. Start the search for your next car today at CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Which Manning brother will win the FanDuel Kick of Destiny 3 on Super Bowl Sunday? Peyton or Eli? Make your free pick now to compete for a share of $10 million in bonus bets. May the best Manning win. Only on FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Vermont. No purchase necessary. $10 million prize pool to be split equally among all eligible participants who made the correct pick. Prize issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
General in this country, and that there is, you know, every time it happens, whether it's small or large, there's like a scramble there and then. And the reality is that we've known for a number of years now that there are changes taking place, even if it's directly attributable to this particular event or otherwise. And that preparation is there. And what we're really seeing this week is particularly in the health sector, there's been a complete failure to actually factor in that if there is an outage for more than a period of 2 days, that people are left incredibly vulnerable. And I suppose the reality is we now need to have a task force put in place that looks at every part of Irish society and the economy in terms of when these events take place.
Now, we had a woman who bearded the Taoiseach up in Roscommon, and she was saying she wanted every house to have solar panels and a windmill, and she wanted to go off-grid. Now, she's changed her mind about going off-grid. But, I mean, it's that kind of knee-jerk reaction. Unfortunate when you are in that situation. But the resolution is to sort of equip every house with a windmill.
But I think the point is, though, the solar panels, like, this is the lack of ambition that we've had from this government, right? So we have climate targets that have to be met by 2030, right? We've got a massive cost of living challenge with regards to people's home heating bills. And now we're seeing that people are left vulnerable because of connection to electricity lines. And the reality is that there hasn't been a thinking about how we actually put in renewable energy into people's homes, like putting solar panels across thousands of homes in this country. At the moment, people have to seek an individual grant to try and energy upgrade their home. Like, that's a completely inefficient way of upgrading people's homes and making them more climate resilient into the future. So we want to see street by street retrofitting so that you're actually cutting people's bills, you're cutting emissions, but you're also making people more resilient.
So yeah, there's two things I'd say here. First of all, I think it's important that we don't take a knee-jerk reaction to this and we kind of sign up. Maybe there are learnings, and I think in fairness, the National Emergency Coordination Group has stood up community response subs around the country in recordly fast time to provide that immediate humanitarian assistance. We have now humanitarian assistance in place. We have increased the amount of renewable electricity coming onto the grid over the last 5 years of the government. We've also reduced the emissions of it. The Labour Party
it's a drop,
like that.
It's a
the
drop
Labour Party
in the ocean.
Might like that. Marie, I didn't interrupt you once, please, with respect. So I think it's important that we actually take these facts as they are coming at the moment. Yes, we need to increase the amount of renewable electricity that comes onto our grid. Yes, we need to increase the availability of batteries, for example, to people as well. But we also need to inform the public of, for example, if someone has an electric vehicle, if they have an appropriate adapter, they could use that to power the appliances in their houses at the moment. We need to make schemes like that available, like the V2L adapter, available for houses that have electricity. If you look at Hannah Daly's article in the Irish Times today, she explains exactly how electric vehicles and batteries can be part of that, that are already in existence and already supported by government.
We had texts from listeners who were using a Kia 6 to keep the various essential bits of the power going. You switch off everything except the stuff that you want to power, like you want to keep your freezer powered maybe, and you make sure you switch off all the other stuff. But that only lasts for a certain length of time. It won't last 5 days.
It won't, but in an emergency situation, that is an appropriate response. And we are talking about an emergency situation. It was an unprecedented event. And maybe there might be more unprecedented events like this in the future. And we use the learnings from this week to inform and plan against it.
What is the solution for those hard cases we keep hearing about? You know, the person with the electric wheelchair, the person who needs, you know, some sort of electrically driven nebulizer for a child. What's the solution for those?
Well, I don't believe that there was a coordinated response with regards to the health sector this week that, you know, was required.
No, but I mean, where does the effort start? Does it start with the health providers saying, we have a record of everyone who needs oxygen, we have a record of everyone who needs a hoist, an electric hoist, we know where they live and we're going to try and help them? Is that I'm really trying to get forensic about this.
Of course, because within every primary care, like ideally in terms of our primary care system in this country, right, okay, there's like as in public health nurses dealing day in, day out with people in the community, vulnerable people in the community. So there needs to be a system whereby they can feed into what are the needs of those individuals in the community in terms of their vulnerabilities. Yeah, well, and I'm not sure that system works.
I understand a lot of the electricity supply companies, you know, if you're a vulnerable customer, you can register to, you know, if there's ever difficulties with your bills or if there's ever going to be power cuts. Those lists are there. You would think that there could be some overarching system in terms of local authorities and the government being able to tap into a list of people that are, you know, have already registered that they're reliant and it's of a super importance to them for those medical devices, for people that aren't badly hit, I think, because I think so many people have been on the radio and they're just absolutely harrowing stories to be hearing people being left
just
for that amount
of
time.
How do you address that? Because there has to be a certain amount of, if you like, community action that you know that somebody in number 6B has a problem.
Yeah, and I think most people as well, there is a ownership of, like what you're saying about putting your hand up, at a personal ownership of flagging that you need assistance in advance, perhaps. But I think if lists are there and there is data available, then it should be tapped into.
Yeah, and then your public health nurse is stranded at home with no electricity or whatever. You know,
yeah, it's not gone.
It's going to be a difficult problem to solve universally. Moving on, the lack of women in the ranks of juniors, super juniors and cabinet. You're in the government parties, Shane, so what say you?
I say that I personally, and I think Fianna Fáil and the government, we want to see more women in politics. We had 7 very excellent female candidates elected to our parliamentary party of 48. 4 of those people now hold ministerial office. It is tiny, and we need to make it better. We need to increase the number of women in politics. But I would say, look at the progress we're making at council level. The council that I came from, where I was elected, the majority of the membership of the Fianna Fáil group there was female. Mm. The membership of that council is female now. That, I think quotas have brought us to a certain point.
It's going to take 2 decades for that to
fix. There is a cultural issue we need to address across
all parties.
I mean,
are you going to be kind of vicious about it and look at constituencies before the next election and say, in order to get women elected here, I'm sorry, Sunshine, I know you've served for 25 years, but we're not going to nominate you.
But there were women candidates like that, Pat, and that's often lost in this. Imelda Goldsborough in Tipperary, Alison Common in Louth, Lisa Chambers in Mayo, Lorraine Clifford-Lee in Dublin Fingal West. They were women who were very competitive candidates. I think this narrative that's taken hold that we had all these token candidates on tickets is a bit unfair.
No, I didn't say they were tickets. I'm saying that sometimes you might
have to elbow
some of the guys out of the way to make room for people who will definitely get elected.
We have built up strong women candidates and we'll continue to do so. I firmly believe, having studied this for a long number of times, the best way to do that is to create a really strong local representational base, which is happening across the country. And this is a problem that is shared by all parties, not just Fianna Fáil. The Labour Party, for example, only 2 of its 11 are women. Fine Gael would have a low proportion. But I do recognise that Fianna Fáil we do have a low number. We want to increase that number, but I say we're making huge progress there.
But you're speaking about councillors, I suppose, the representation increasing on councils, which is great and to be welcome. But then when they cast their eyes upward and say, where am I going to end in my career here? They're like, well, actually, we're moving backwards in terms of that. And I think people, the reason why the pushback is because we've heard Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael speak in the last government about, you know, pushing on with gender equality, you know, putting in different measures for that. But then when push comes to shove, we're actually seeing a fallback in the numbers, which is, it's just really disappointing, I think, for people that think that even though they might just expect the steps to be baby steps, they do expect progress, not regression.
Marie?
Yeah, look, there's an irony here. I think there's a commitment in the programme for government towards, you know, improving gender equality on boards, and yet in the top board of the country, which is our cabinet, you know, the 2 biggest parties in the country, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, have just thumbed their nose to any notion of promoting gender equality. And to me, this is about showing leadership, right? We can't go around talking about that we need more women in politics and then decide that we're actually going to give jobs to the boys, you know, and that has played into the notion this week about having 23.
Do you see the problem? You've got someone maybe who served their time as a backbencher, and then they expect that they have some prospect of promotion after serving their time and learning. And then someone comes in as a first-time TD and gets a job as a junior or super junior or even a cabinet member just because they make up a quota.
Well, actually, I must say now, I you know, without naming names, but there are many fine women in Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael who could have become cabinet ministers, you know, who were either left as junior ministers or indeed had nothing at all. And you know, the reality is that they should have been supported, but they weren't for whatever reason. And at the end of the day, you know, we expect politics to be representative of our society. Society is obviously made up of 50% men and women out there. And yet when we look to our political leadership, we don't have that. And that is a problem.
Yeah, the reporters were speaking after the cabinet briefing, asking the Taoiseach spokesperson about this, if the government had a problem with women. Of course, it doesn't. He said like a huge amount of issues are considered, like geography, ability, experience, and also incumbency. But then that's the whole issue, is in terms of if we can't get women into the backbenches to end up being elevated to a higher position, then you're never going to get there.
Yeah, but do you take out a Pascal Donoghue from finance and put in a Hildegard Nocton simply because she's female? Well, and she deserves a chance.
Let's look at that. When was the last time we had a woman being in a beefy ministry like finance, like public expenditure? Yes, we had
like justice.
We had justice. Take that, but that is a conversation that's happening in Leinster House at the moment. Is the three senior women that are in those positions are in, I suppose, what people would class these sort of social briefs. You have, you know, health, education, children and disability, and it has to be said, when Helen McEntee was in the justice brief, she did whatever criticisms you have on policing and security and all the rest, she did push forward on a lot of legislation when it came to domestic violence on women. There was the issue of the sharing of intimate images. That had been on the statute books and talked about for a guts of 10 years, and it took a female justice minister to actually just get that done and follow in the footsteps of the UK and other countries.
Okay. I just want to come in there very quickly. Niamh Smith is the minister responsible for AI digitalisation, probably the most significant technological challenges we're facing. I don't think anyone would suggest that's one of the social reasons.
No, she's not a senior minister.
But if we look in the full gambit, like, we can't keep changing the goalposts about where the criticism is going to locate.
I accept
the general point. We need more women in politics, for sure. And we would love to have more women in the parliamentary party. The way to do that, I think, is building up strong local representatives. We only had 4 months, really, between the local elections.
I have to leave it there. My thanks to the last voice you're hearing there is Shane Moynihan, TD for Dublin Midwest. Before that, Christina Finn, political editor of The Journal, and Marie Sherlock, Labour TD for Dublin Central. Thank you, one and all. And that is all we have time for. Don't forget, our items from today are uploaded as podcasts, which you can listen to in the Newstalk app, powered by Go Loud. Just search for The Pat Kenny Show.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.